Welcome to Come and See, your podcast for finding truth in a world of chaos. Brought to you by Living Waters Abide Ministries. With host and founder, Richard Case, and co-host and retreat leader, Kathy Riccone. Jesus reminds us to watch for the signs of his return. Today, we will explore further what we are seeing in our times that line up with what signs he said would indicate the potential of the end and his return. We will also discuss the practical meaning of this as we watch and as a remnant prepare as he so leads. And now your host, Richard Case.
Good morning, everybody. This is End Times Friday, and welcome, Denny. Denny's serving as our co-host now for End Times Friday, so Kathy can take some break and do some other things. And we welcome our good friends Eric and Rabbi Ephraim, and we're very excited to have you guys on. This is part three. We've talked about, you know, what was happening in Gaza. Last discussion we had was this interesting discussion of the spiritual temperature of Israel as they approach all these different things. And in that regard, we wanted to kind of begin the topic today of, from, and this is from America perspective, is we know that Trump is working with Saudi Arabia, who has stated that they would be willing to join the Abraham Accords if there was a two-state solution. So, you know, Denny and I have some questions about what does that mean to Israel, and what's the perspective of that movement with America towards Saudi Arabia, and is Israel a key player in that process? Is it on the sideline waiting for something to happen? How do you define a two-state solution? All those questions we have, so we'll just kind of throw it open to say, you know, what's your thought about the whole thing?
I can address the, Eric, maybe you can get into the Saudi Arabia thing better than me, but I can address the two-state solution thing. And Israel has no appetite for a two-state solution anymore after October 7th. There wasn't a whole lot before October 7th. Now there's virtually none. No one's interested. No one's talking about it. No politician would gain anything if he put it out there as something he was promoting. And the reason is quite simple to us, and I'm not quite sure why it's not simple to every other world leader or journalist who covers the area, and that is that the areas which are referred to as Palestinian territories, Gaza and the West Bank, Judea and Samaria, are being run by terror organizations. They have been from day one terror organizations. Their stated goals are to destroy the Jewish nation. Their goal is clearly and obviously not to create a state of their own, but to destroy the Jewish state. This has not changed since 1921, when they started the first terror pogroms, when the Jewish people started talking about creating a state. And any land, money, resources, borders that they have been, are, and will be used to create a terror state with which to try and destroy Israel and kill as many Jews as possible. This is just a clear, obvious fact to us. It is based on our entire history over the last 100 years in relationship with these people. Israelis would love nothing more than to live side by side by a Palestinian state living in peace with it. We would be so happy to give an independent Palestinian state in Gaza and the entire West Bank if they were Sweden, Finland, or Switzerland, and would live side by side at peace with us. But that's not their interest. And you've got to be blind to not see that. And Israel has no appetite for giving them more ability to kill our children, whether those children are civilians getting hit by missiles, children that are being massacred by cross-border attacks, or children that have to fight in the army to defend us against their attempts to do genocide against the Jewish people, which is their open, written, clear, obvious, repeated goal. So we have no interest in going that direction, and any peeps about it in the world, I don't know where it's coming from.
When you hear about, you know, like Saudi Arabia saying a condition is two-state solution, is there any definition to that at all in terms of what they mean by that?
Well, first of all, you need to bear in mind that prior to the October 7th attack under the Biden administration, there was a path that was unfolding that was pretty clearly going to happen within less than a year, whereby there was going to be Saudi Arabia joining the Abraham Accords, okay? And it might have required Israel to talk about a path to a Palestinian state, I don't know. But there was near no clear deadline, no clear interpretation of what the borders would look like. Nothing like this were being required. So now if we take where the situation is now, I'm sure that Ben Salman had these kind of frank discussions, probably not only with President Trump and the administration, but probably also with senior Israeli officials like Ron Dermer, who recently stepped down, senior advisor to the government. What's been reported, and is not 100% sure this is the case or not, that their problem is not that they're so fanatically glued to that there be a Palestinian state. Their problem is that they have a population that's glued to Al Jazeera TV. Al Jazeera TV is produced by the state of Qatar. Mm-hmm. It's a fanatically run Muslim Brotherhood supporting extremely wealthy oil state that funds Muslim Brotherhood fanaticism all over the world, including in the United States, that at some point the United States is going to need to reckon with. In any case, the fanaticism portrayed by Al Jazeera on the TV network is broadcast throughout the entire Arab world, and they see a view of the conflict that, you wouldn't help but conclude that Israel is just a bunch of murderers and rapists and killers. And so we have a population that watches that, and they reach the conclusion that Israel's got a real problem. It's very hard for you as the leader to all of a sudden start announcing an agreement of some form of peace with that state called Israel. So it's my understanding from reading and listening to all the commentators that what Saudi Arabia is looking for is a way to tell their population that, see, we signed this deal with Israel, and what we got was a clear pathway to a state, okay? And then they can rationalize how they went into this agreement with their people. Now, if, let's say, it's a five-year path and the conditions that need to be met during that 5 years are never met, and therefore it never comes to fruition, it gives the leadership in Saudi Arabia the right to say, well, look, we gave them their opportunity, and we can't force it, you know, they blew it. So that, I think that's the prevailing opinion. And it could be, and maybe I'm reading too much between the lines, but in listening to Ben Salman's comments, he has no real love for Prime Minister Netanyahu for whatever reasons he sees, at least when he discusses it pseudo-publicly. And maybe he wants to see new leadership. I don't know exactly what is being discussed in Washington, but I think that's the general feeling here. That is, we're close, but no one's handing out cigars yet.
And I guess if we look at the way the Trump plan on Gaza was laid out, 21 steps, three phases or whatever, that it's this idea that you're on a path, but likely never going to get there. I'm seeing more and more commentators here reporting it this way on this Saudi Arabia deal, too, that this is not a state. A Palestinian state, it's a path, and that path will probably have a million steps and phases when it gets laid out as well. But that may be enough to facilitate, you know, meaningful.
And someone told me that, no, it was today, I was listening to a commentator, a very popular one called Amit Siegel here in Israel. And he said explicitly in one of the 21 terms, it says, and part of the process, the Palestinian Authority must adopt and endorse support of LGBT community, or maybe I have the letters wrong, I don't know. There's just no way either Hamas or the Palestinian Authority are ever going to endorse. They kill homosexuals.
That's the poison pill.
Yeah. So my guess is that's what Ron Dermer got snuck into the agreement, is my guess. That's what I'm guessing.
That's a good one.
Yeah. So the view here regarding what happened in Washington between President Trump and Saudi Arabia is, I think, first of all, while we all have our interests of Israel at heart, we also recognize the United States and that President Trump needs to look after the United States and does and should be doing what's in the interest of the United States. And having a country like Saudi Arabia, which is marching slowly but surely to a moderate form of Islam, not a fanatical, you know, Shaheed, suicidal philosophy. By the way, they were once like that, but I think 9/11, when they realized that so many of the terrorists were former Saudi Arabians, that there was a switch, that went off in the kingdom where the rulers decided, well, God, we need to do something about this. And so they've been marching along a plan, and it's been pretty well implemented as far as I can see, as changing their education system and to be much more tolerant and so on. And this is just the kind of ally that the United States should be seeking in the Middle East. And so here you have an ally that's, you know, marching along to moderation, sitting on a ton of oil, a ton of wealth, strategically located. So, you know, the United States should be trying to, come to an agreement. Whether it's the United States' interest in some kind of defense treaty with it, I don't know. I mean, one thing Israel has promised the United States over and over and over again, and I never, ever see this changing, is that we'll never, ever want to see American boots on the ground helping us defend ourselves. I can't ever imagine conditions where that would ever happen. Unlike Europe, I mean, look how many Americans are stationed in Europe or Japan or Korea. I mean, that's not, you know, here we're an American ally, and we're, you know, we're very clear about this. And so, you know, the United States should do what's in its interest. In terms of the F-35s, I don't know enough. You know, I think the United States needs to be extremely careful with these aircraft. Because if you have a country that likes to play, like Turkey, for example, Turkey bought, you know, anti-aircraft missiles from Russia. Now, who's to say that Turkey's not going to get an F-35 and invite the Russians to come in and take a peek at it, you know? Or Saudi Arabia invites China. I mean, so the United States needs to figure all this out. And it's in our interest that the United States also figures that out, because we don't want Russian 535s to deal with. But the Israel has gotten the ability to add its own enhancements to the F-35s that really make it much more suitable for the kinds of missions that Israel has been flying. I'm not even sure that American F-35s could have done with the Israeli F-35 during the 12-day war with Iran because of the modifications that Israel made. So what Israel is looking for all the time is this qualitative edge. I don't know, you know, by the time the F-35s, you know, there's a final agreement and all things are signed and then there's a delivery date, we're talking about 8 or 9 years from now is my guess by the time they take their first delivery. I think it was like 7 years before when Israel signed and it got its first aircraft, I think. So a lot can happen. And I hope that the United States, first and foremost, watches out for its own interest to make sure its technology is secured. Because yeah. those aircraft are something special.
If you define this as you are, they would agree to a path to a two-state solution, which would have all these conditions, which unless those conditions are met, it actually won't happen, but they could agree that at least we could establish that path. And Israel and the United States, Saudi Arabia agree to that. Do you believe then, therefore, if we take it that approach, that there'll be a strengthened, let's say, environment for Israel, knowing what we talked about in session one here, that you know, the extremists aren't going to quit at all. They're going to continue to attempt to do it, but there's a ability of IDF to kind of, you know, hold it back. Will it be enhanced if Saudi Arabia and America and Israel come to a conclusion about the Abrahamic Accords based on that premise? Will it actually be beneficial, in other words, to Israel to maintain a stronger level of peace, not a permanent peace, but a stronger level of peace? Denny, do you have any other way to ask that question?
Well asked.
So I think there's a lot of genuine interest in Israel within the government, population, largely the IDF. Well, the IDF has stated publicly, quote unquote, that they think that the F-35 deal is not a good deal for Israel, one between, but that aside, that there's a lot of promise with, reaching some kind of peace with Saudi Arabia, because the feeling here is that it will trigger, I don't want to use the word avalanche, but it'll trigger a subsequent number of countries that we believe could become potentially strong trade partners for Israel, one of which would be Indonesia, for example. And trading with Saudi Arabia, you know, the trade with the United Arab Emirates, there is trade. It's not insignificant. I wouldn't say it's solid yet, you know, but it's there. And I think the more trade that takes place between countries, the more difficult it becomes for them to fight one another. And so I think with the Saudi Arabia joining, there'll be a flurry of probably 3 or 4 other countries that will come in soon after. And through that combination of countries, it will lead over a period of time, it won't take place right away, but over a period of, I don't know how many years, to substantial strategic ties. There's already a dialogue going on between the Saudi Arabian Air Force and Army and the Israeli Air Force and Army through CENTCOM. So when CENTCOM is the U.S. Department, I guess Department of War now, it's operational center in the Middle East, where everything that happens in the Middle East regarding the United States operates out of there and happens to be the largest base in the area, which is in Qatar, Doha, which being an Israeli, I'm not so happy about, but that's what the Americans decided to do. So that group, that American operation, helps coordinate military activities across its allies in the Middle East, and Israel's a part of that. So indirectly, Israel is communicating with Saudi Arabia. When missiles from Iran cross Jordanian airspace, or I'm not sure Iraqi airspace, but if I don't know if any crossed Saudi Arabian airspace or not, but if they had, all those countries were actively using arms that they had to take them out because they crossed their airspace. So that's an example of those organizations cooperating and of the interactions that are already taking place between these countries and military law. Ironically, by the way, because Israel, and with the help of the United States, was so successful in this 12-day war last June against Iran, that Saudi Arabia's bit, the pressure for doing a deal with Israel has kind of been lifted a bit, because they were always big, largely concerned about Iran as a threat, and Israel just neutralized them for several years to come as a real threat. So Saudi Arabia feels less pressure. It's kind of ironic.
Yeah, it is interesting. Rabbi, any other thoughts for you on perspective on that, all that?
Yeah, no, just the we love Abraham Accords. The more people we have some sort of a treaty, the better. It definitely strengthens us, and it isolates our enemies more. It puts Iran and the axis of evil and Hamas and Hezbollah, they become much more isolated. They realize that Israel has friends to some degree, and that's all really good. So we definitely look forward to it. And hope they'll somehow give a pass to the Palestinian state issue or figure out a way to just window dress it.
It does seem that the economic levers, which have really increased over the last year, the use of tariffs, the use of sanctions, it seems that the that President Trump really wants to see himself as a peacemaker in his legacy, to almost be led by that. And the idea, as Eric said, that trade is good for not just the United States, but trade is good for Israel with these partners. This idea of an avalanche following it, which is sort of the sense we get here as the goal, does that the improvement in economics in all these countries, does that start to diminish the ability of your enemies to find a foothold?
I think for sure. I mean, let's take the United Arab Emirates as a case in point. I don't know a lot about its leadership, but I can tell you they've done an incredible job. Their economy now, the GDP that's relying on oil or fossil fuels is a minor part of their economy now. They're not manufacturing a great deal of stuff, okay? Although, I don't know, I've heard this thing called Dubai chocolate. I don't know. But in any case, they see themselves as like the marketplace for the world, you know, to come in and like a Middle East bazaar. You can buy and sell things from one country to another country anywhere in the world. And they're quite successful in doing that. Most of the people that live, you know, in the United Arab Emirates are not citizens. They have this guest policy where, I don't know, you invest or you buy a home there and you're allowed residency for a certain period of time. I've read a lot of wealthy people from Great Britain and some from Norway, in order to escape their high income taxes, are going there. You know, all kinds of things. You know, they've successfully transitioned their economy, and Saudi Arabia is, boy, they're determined to do the same. Yep. You know, and they're going to keep working at it till they succeed. You know, they're building an enormous, I mean, huge solar photovoltaic farm along the Red Sea. And, you know, they're expecting to be able to start exporting power at some point. So I think the leadership of these countries is the United States should be, in their own interest, aligned with these countries. Their human rights records aren't 100%, okay? You know, things get done in these countries that we find maybe unorthodox is just not, you know, it's too polite. But, you know, you can't just turn a switch, you know, and expect everything to turn on a dime. It's going to take these countries a while to evolve their populations. But I'm not sure. I mean, the Muslim Brotherhood is outlawed in these countries now. And I'm willing to bet that in 15 years, they won't even need to outlaw it. No one will find any interest in it, because they'll see that the future that the Muslim Brotherhood offers these people, the Muslims in this part of the world, is a future of death and suicide, whereas their leadership in their countries is offering them and their children, you know, an economy and jobs and a future where people can live and prosper and enjoy their lives like normal human beings.
And Rabbi, you know, since you are a tour guide as well, are you seeing that opening up, if now that things have settled down somewhat and this Abrahamic Accord may expand to Saudi Arabia, do you foresee a return of, you know, very booming tourism and economy there in Israel?
Tourism-wise, yes. There's already, the boom has started. There's already a very, very strong return of tourists since the ceasefire. And places that were not very busy are packed again, like the Western Wall, Church of the Holy Sepulchre, the Jewish sort of tourist markets. There's a very, very beautiful return. And it's still early on. So we're expecting, God willing, if we don't have any more wars, that it should continue strong and get even stronger for the upcoming summer. It's really nice to see.
That's fantastic to hear.
By the way, even with countries that we have peace agreements with, there's no Arab Muslim countries, even though there are cold peaces with those countries. There's virtually no tourism that comes. We don't get tourists from Jordan, from Egypt, from the United Arab Emirates, a teeny tiny bit. So that's not going to make the difference. But not having wars does make a difference.
You know, the ironic part of all this? That even when, before 1967, between 1948 and 1967, Eastern Jerusalem was occupied by Jordan. No one in the world outside of Great Britain recognized it, but it was occupied by Jordan. Not a single Arab leader from any country other than Jordan ever visited the holy sites, Muslim holy sites in Jerusalem. None. So all this talk about Al-Quds and how holy it is, it's the Muslim Brotherhood nonsense. You know, if it was so holy, then why wasn't it, you know, why weren't there tourists visiting there? On the other hand, there's ongoing massive Christian tourism coming here, visiting, you know, the holy sites, come Easter, you know, the walking along the Via Della Rosa, the right. 12 stops of Christ and going up into the northern Capernaum and all the sites near the Kinneret Lake. So I don't know, you know, how come Jerusalem's so holy then, if no one ever bothered to visit?
It'll be interesting discussion when we return again. We'd like to talk to you about that whole discussion of that, you know, Christians, particularly American Christians, they love visiting Israel. You know, what's the Jewish perspective of all that and them coming over and, you know, supporting it? And
We'd also be interested in your perspective. I mean, when I'm reading about this new enthusiasm amongst the Generation Z in the James, you know, Saint James Bible and so on, I'm also reading that they're not the traditional Christians we're familiar with. That they're blaming Jews once again for the death of Christ, and that Israel is an abomination and. It seems to be a different strain of Christianity than what we're familiar with.
That is something to discuss, because it is an interesting phenomenon, is that their perspective, while, you know, it's what we believe about Christianity, they are receiving, for some reason, a kind of a skewed view of Israel as not ordained, not God's, you know, country. It's just, you know, the church has replaced it, what's called replacement theology. And they, for some reason, have more of a stronger view of that. So we would love to talk to you about that interesting thing coming up. Because the one thing that I do understand and foresee is, you know, you've got two tracks going on. One is this potential, you know, Abrahamic Accord, you know, better strength economy and peace. But at the same time, there's a very strong anti-Semitism going on. And maybe is that, and particularly the younger generation, where is that going to come from? Where is that going to go? So are those two things going to collide in a different way? That'll be an interesting discussion with us. So anyway, thank you so much for all this great input. And thank you for defining, you know, the perspective of a two-state solution, which really, it's not establishing a two-state, it's establishing a path to a two-state if. And we know that, yeah, those conditions probably aren't going to be met, you know. And the reason, by the way, whenever you have a any kind of an honorable agreement, both sides actually have to mm-hmm. honor the agreement, and the terrorists don't honor anything. So it's never, in our viewpoint, that's never going to come together. So it'll be interesting. So anyway, thank you so much. And Denny, thank you for facilitating this. We wish you, we would say Merry Christmas and Happy Hanukkah for you guys coming up. And I know you have great celebrations coming up. And we will see you where we take basically a break from taping in the new year. We've already kind of got ahead of the game. So we will reconvene the first part of January. We look forward to it. And so thank you so much for your beautiful contribution. I can tell you that our audience so looks forward to hearing your perspective on things. And the neat thing is that we receive the truth from you, and that's what we care about. So thank you for that. Wish you well coming up in the end of the year. And if you have questions, by the way, audience, and you want to ask it, and we'll get answers for them, our good friends, send it in at questions at BidenMinistries.com. And we look forward to seeing you soon. Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us for today's episode of Come and See, your podcast for truth in a world of chaos. Brought to you by Living Waters Abide Ministries. Send us your questions and comments and tune in tomorrow for more answers to your personal questions about living life in God's truth. Remember, God's will is best and none better. His truth brings peace in this world of chaos.